This is Dr. Michael Bricky with Ageless Lifestyles Radio, cutting-edge thinking for being youthful at every age. On each program, I interview experts on what it takes to live longer, healthier, and happier. Today's show is Boomeritis, Dealing with Boomer Life Transitions. And our guests are Dr. Jeff Johnson and Dr. Paula Foreman. How does a once narcissistic generation that was determined to reshape the world deal with career crashes, job burnout, divorce, emptiness, aging parents, and deciding whether to retire? Psychologist Dr. Jeff Johnson and sociologist Dr. Paula Foreman, authors of The Hourglass Solution, help us think out what is unique about boomers and how boomers can generatively handle their life transitions. Jeff and Paula, welcome.
Thank you.
Hi, thanks.
It's nice to be here. Thanks for the invitation.
I'm delighted to have you. Boomers got that narcissistic label, but turned out to be some of the most hovering parents, heavily scheduling their kids with soccer games and all kinds of lessons and supporting them through college, maybe even pushing them into college, and often taking care of aging parents as well. Did boomers change, or was the narcissism an unfair reputation?
I don't think boomers changed. I think a lot of life happened to all of us along the way. Narcissism implies it's about a focus on oneself, and that, of course, continues to be the case for boomers. But we also do what we need to do. And if that means taking care of the kids and taking care of our parents at the same time, we do that.
So it's a bring it on when life brings us challenges.
Right, absolutely. And I think one of the things that has been a hallmark of boomers is this I can do everything attitude. And it is one of the problems the boomers are facing, maybe a little inability to prioritize all these responsibilities that are being thrown at them. I think especially the female boomers who wanted to have it all, wanted to have a family, wanted to have a big career, wanted all of those things. And now it's just a pile on of responsibilities, and we're seeing that boomers are now trying to do it all and take care of themselves, their kids, and their parents.
What you're talking about is this sense of entitlement that I think we have had as a generation since we were very young, and there are a lot of reasons for that. But that continues to be the case. That's why we resist aging, resist traditional retirement, resist diminishment virtually in any arena, no matter what our responsibilities.
So it's an extraordinarily confident generation. Where did the entitlement come from?
I think we grew up in the 50s and 60s, which was really the age of entitlement for children that far surpassed any other generation. It was a childhood that was so free of responsibility and so focused on the kids. It really was the generation that focused on giving children everything.
As much as
parents possibly could. And our parents all wanted us to have absolutely everything we could to be able to go to college, to be able to do things they couldn't do. But also, in a broader social sense, it was the era of much greater equality, much greater diversity, much greater opportunity.
And great economic prosperity.
Exactly. So the sense of entitlement, I think, for this generation came from all of those factors that just really hadn't existed for our parents. Those opportunities just simply weren't there for our parents.
Are boomers currently having that same focus on the kids that their parents had?
I think that boomers are, you know, every generation has always wanted their children to have more. Every generation's always wanted their kids to maybe be able to do a little bit better than they did in whatever areas of life mattered to them, whether it was education or money or opportunity. And I think one of the issues with boomer kids today is it's pretty hard to give your kids more opportunity today than we all grew up with. So that's one reason that I think there is that helicopter parent and the hovering that didn't exist before.
But one of the big differences, I think, between boomer parents and our parents, World War II parents, is boomers have very often been accused of blurring the distinction between being parents and being friends with their child and being reluctant to grow up themselves, and so therefore being more reluctant. You don't see boomers cast in the father knows best role too often, and have tended to be more permissive. No doubt as a result of our own experiences coming of age in the 1960s, where we too were, we took permission into our own hands and maybe are a little more apt to give it as boomers become parents.
I think a good illustration on Desperate Housewives, Susan has a teenage daughter, and whenever things are going wrong in Susan's love life, she's discussing it with her daughter, which every time I see that, I say, this is so inappropriate.
Right.
It does. It manifests itself, obviously, in many ways. And as a senior manager in advertising, both Paul and I have met so many parents of the young people who work for us, it's rather astounding. And that wouldn't have happened 20 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
I certainly didn't bring my parents in to meet all of my bosses. but the kids today, and I say kids in a broad term, but the 20-somethings and early 30-somethings really want their parents to be involved in their lives in a way that is very different.
It's an amazing difference, yeah.
Both of us have taught college classes and certainly know many people in academia, and it's interesting. Parents call and complain if their kids don't get the right grade. I would have been mortified had my mother done that in college. But it's a different generation.
But it's the parents, of course, that have this sense of entitlement that they can intrude themselves on any situation, whether or not they have the jurisdiction.
Boomers are often called the generation that won't go away, or the generation that won't shut up, and it still is true.
But then these are the areas in which boomers have received a lot of criticism, perhaps deserved. But the other aspect of having a sense of entitlement made us in our youth fight for a lot of things, whether it's liberation movements of all sorts, a feeling that we should and could have an enormous impact on the political climate in which we lived. And I think that we continue to feel that way. It's why boomers are as assertive as they are now in trying to change what midlife and beyond is going to look like. We feel entitled to be happy. We feel entitled to continue doing whatever it is we want to do, even if that means hanging on to our youth a little bit longer than our previous generations did.
Yeah, I hadn't realized how many implications there were to that entitlement, even into child rearing.
Yes.
You mentioned Betty Friedan as years ago citing the unhappy housewife of the 50s and the malaise. Is there a boomer malaise now?
Well, yes, it's the hourglass effect. When we cited Betty Friedan, she had talked about the problem of the woman of the 50s, the disease that had no name, the lack of focus and lack of options were available to women of the 1950s. The boomer equivalent of that is arriving in midlife and feeling, wait a minute, what are my options? I made my bed. Do I spend the next 20 or 30 years living with the set of decisions that I made as a very young person?
Exactly, and that's where this feeling of stuck in midlife is so pervasive among boomers, because it's really quite a natural stage of life to go through. As Paula had mentioned, all the decisions you made when you were younger, your decision where to go to college or if you should go to college, if you're going to get married, who you're going to get married, are you going to have kids, buy a house, all of those decisions do tend to give you a set of responsibilities that can leave you few choices. But at a certain age, and boomers are getting to that age right now, these choices really start to open up again. And it takes a psychological reorientation to say, you know, all those decisions I made when I was younger, that's great. But now I'm entering a new life stage, and I have new choices to make and new opportunities in front of me. And for a lot of boomers, they weren't aware that life was going to offer these new opportunities, and it really does, because the previous generations didn't have those opportunities. It didn't open up again. But for boomers, the choices are really phenomenal today. So many boomers are living longer, boomers are staying healthier. These opportunities that open up are there if you have the courage to really take hold of them.
If you name that disease.
Right.
Well, it's a huge difference, because their parents had a model of work for the same company till you're 65 and then get the gold watch, retire, and hopefully get 10 good years in Florida. And the boomers have just unlimited choices, but it takes courage.
It does, because there really isn't a role model for boomers, and so many of the boomers, the older boomers, who bought into that, I'm going to take what's left of the gold watch and I'm going to retire, have decided a few years later that this is boring. I can't do this. I'm not going to do this for the rest of my life. Boomers don't want to take a back seat, and that sense of, it really boils down in some ways to the sense of personal fulfillment that boomers want to feel personally fulfilled, and they're not ready to be put out to pasture by any means. So where previous generations may have wanted to take that backseat role, boomers do not want to do that. And I think that's a very big difference between boomers and previous generations.
In the Hourglass Solution, you put a lot of emphasis on having the courage and having the character to really realize what the options are and make decisions rather than just keep on the same course that you're on. Where do people get stuck there? Is it not realizing they have the choice or being afraid to take the choices?
I think it's both pieces of it, but the not realizing that you have a choice happens to all of us. I think we ought to say, too, that everybody gets stuck at some point in their life. In fact, frequently, the condition of stuck is ubiquitous. And once you realize that, you hear it around you all the time. The number of times you hear people say, I have no choice, or I'd like to do X, but I'm too old, or I can't start something new, or I'd love to, but my spouse wouldn't consider it, or I would have loved to play the piano. Those are all symptomatic of feeling like you don't have options. And that, of course, that's the malaise. The problem, the hourglass effect, the problem that we're describing, is this sense that life will just continue more like yesterday than not, and that you have really very little control over that, that the big decisions have already been made. The first step in getting out of that is to realize that no matter where you're situated in life, there are always options. No matter how dire your predicament, there are always options. No matter what the constraints that you are experiencing, there are still, yet again, options. Started a book with a quote to that effect. It basically said, even slaves have options. There's a rebellion, there's death, but there are options. And the recognition that there are not just one course of action to which you are committed, but a variety of possibilities in itself is liberating. And then, of course, you go through the process of deciding what are the pluses and minuses associated with the array of options on any given subject. You might not like them so much, but the realization that they exist is in itself helpful.
Does it usually take a crisis for people to realize that they have the options?
So often it does take a crisis. It could be a health crisis or the health crisis of a loved one. It could be a divorce. It could be laid off from work. Those are events that force people to make decisions that they hadn't previously thought about. And we really try to make the point in the book that please don't wait until that happens. It's easy to wait until a crisis happens, and it will happen to many, many people, but it's so much more productive to be making these decisions earlier in your life rather than waiting until the crisis happens. It was amazing to us how many people went through these crises and said, this was the best thing that ever happened to me. And even very tragic events in people's lives did force them to make some changes that they realized they never would have done before. But it's a sad statement to say I'm going to wait until tragedy hits before I'm going to make these changes in my life, because people are really capable of making all of these changes in their life well before a crisis.
The Hourglass Solution, it's not a here's a step-by-step process that you go through, but it was more sharing examples of what people have experienced and choices that they've made to just kind of hold people's hand and say, what you're going through is normal and you can do it, and here's some role models for you.
Well, we were also trying to say, okay, here are the big categories, big broad categories of life where you may feel that your bed is already made, your relationships, your roles within those relationships that define your life. We're saying, no, wait a minute, hang on. You have the opportunity of reevaluating these relationships. You may keep the relationship but want to change your role. Same idea. We have this great big bucket we call energy that has to do with the physical, mental, and emotional ramifications of the aging process. Again, it ain't over till it's over. There's an enormous impact that you can have on that area of your life. Then we go on to talk about work and money.
Right, and the relationships in your life and all of the facets that you need to take a good hard look at and determine whether it's working for you or not. And I think the examples, we talked to hundreds of boomers in putting the book together, some successes and some not yet successes, to hopefully give people ideas about how to approach it themselves, because there is no one-size-fits-all solution. It would have been so much easier if that were true, but there isn't.
Which is why, you know, our prescriptives were really, they are meant to inspire. Because, of course, everybody's got to come up with their own hourglass solution. The one that works for you might not work for me.
We'll get back to Dr. Johnson and Dr. Foreman in just a moment. Note how old you feel now. You will soon feel a lot younger after hearing Dr. Bricky. That's how I'm usually introduced when I give a keynote address. We are brainwashed with limiting beliefs about aging. As America's preeminent anti-aging psychologist, I bring good news for a change. A change in how you view aging, and I do it with a good helping of humor. In short, I help audiences learn the mental game for living longer, healthier, and happier. But I'm not satisfied with people just acquiring information and having a feel-good time. I have people adopt healthier beliefs on the spot and lock them in for lifelong benefits. I also like to stay and do breakout sessions, consulting, and individual coaching at no additional cost. When your organization or business needs a speaker, have them check out my demo video at anti-aging-speaker.com. That's anti-aging-speaker.com. And give me a call. My phone number is on all my websites. And now back to Dr. Johnson and Dr. Foreman. Now, you favored the term greater adulthood. Why did you particularly like that term, and what do you see it meaning?
We really felt that we needed a new term for those years after 50 that were more positive and indicative of the opportunities and the increasingly large opportunities that boomers are facing. So greater adulthood for us, as opposed to the more common terms of senior citizen, golden age,
retiree.
We felt that we needed a new term for this life stage, which is, in our heads, maybe the ages between 50 and 70. We'll have to look at those years after 70. But between those, there's people have the opportunity for such change and such choice between the ages of 50 and 70 that we felt it needed its own term.
I even see 50 to 70 as the new middle age.
Yeah.
It definitely is. And middle age is an increasingly elusive life stage for people as people are staying younger feeling with more energy and more years ahead of them and more opportunities.
But we were also trying with that new vocabulary, greater adulthood, is there's young adulthood, which has the positives and all the negatives that we're familiar with, but we were trying to be suggestive of the promise of these years, because we truly do believe that they have the potential of being at least as exciting as young adulthood, if not more so, because by the time you reached 50, you know a bit more about yourself, about life, about what you like, what you don't like, what you're good at, what you're not good at. There's an enormous amount of data to be used in constructing your next life stage.
And I was delighted to see you use the very positive word greater. The previous generation was absolutely brilliant in calling themselves the greatest generation. What a
right.
PR coup. And I think greater adulthood has some of that same positive feel to it.
We hope so, because it really, it's such a great time of life for people, as Paula had said, because you have a much better sense of yourself if you're willing to actually take a look and take a hard look and evaluate the good things and bad things about your life. And as Paula had said, what you're good at and what you're bad at. The decisions you made when you were 20 were much less informed than the decisions you make when you're 50. And that's the advantage of that self-awareness.
And that's where, Suze, again, where the sense of entitlement comes in recognizing that they have options. They are also sort of breathing new life into the idea they had as young adults, which was a sense that the world is their oyster, that we can be in control of our own destiny, that we can make some new rules for ourselves as we did when we were young.
We're talking with psychologist Dr. Jeff Johnson and sociologist Dr. Paula Forman, authors of The Hourglass Solution, A Boomer's Guide to the Rest of Your Life. Their website is thehourglasssolution.com, and that includes their blog. And both of you have an advertising background.
That, which is how we met, actually. We've worked together on and off for a long time before we jointly started to come up with the idea for this book.
And Paula, you're now teaching in college.
Actually, I'm not teaching right now. We finished this book. I embarked on my own new hourglass adventure. We moved. My husband and I moved. And I write pretty much full-time now, as a columnist in some local magazines and pretty frequent blogger, both on our own blog and here and there for others.
And Jeff, what are you doing?
I'm, for the next few months, still in the advertising business and am making some major moves in my life prior to the end of this year, certainly, which I'll be talking about on our blog as I do these things. One of the things I would like to mention in reference to thehourglasssolution.com is we really have been encouraging people, whether they've read our book or not, to write in and ask us questions about their life or to tell us their own stories, the good stories and the bad stories. We've found it very illuminating as people have sent us notes about things that have worked for them, and we're hoping, as over the next couple of months, to put more of those how-to tips on the website and to use more examples of people's successes and what they've done. And if you feel that you're stuck and don't know how to get unstuck, feel free to write to us through the website, thehourglasssolution.com, and we will do everything we can to answer everyone's query individually and get a dialogue going about how to get unstuck in midlife.
So the blog's a lot like your book. It's a lot of sharing of life recipes and life experiences so that people can get some role modeling and ideas on how they might get unstuck if they're feeling stuck.
Absolutely. And one of the things that has happened to us in this process is we've realized that there's a lot of universality. Part of the boomer generation, one of 75 million, we're sort of used to the idea that we're not, whatever it is we're going through, there's probably a couple of million people going through the same thing at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
And the response to our blog has sort of proved that to us. Whatever we happen to be going through, whether it's an issue with parents or children, or I just wrote a couple of weeks ago about being completely horrified by a skin cancer that appeared on my arm and was surprised at the number of people who responded, actually I wasn't surprised, with similar experiences and similar feelings to having what was to them surprising ailment.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's going to be one of the issues that face boomers as they get older, is all of the health changes that boomers are not prepared for. Boomers are not prepared to slow down at all. And it's going to be, it's what Paul and I have talked about maybe being the main focus of our next book, to really address those issues. So we encourage people to write to us with their stories. It's been really absolutely inspiring for us as people have written to us with what they've done to change their lives. It's great.
Yeah, I think that first health crisis often just shatters their sense of being indestructible and living forever, and often causes a bit of a crisis and a lot of reassessment.
Absolutely. You hit 50 and something, some part wears out, and everyone is shocked. Everyone is shocked, and then of course you think, well,
and then you just wait for the next part to wear out.
Well, and, yeah, sign up for the replacement.
The movie The Big Chill back in 1983, people adopted that as the image for boomers. I suspect it's terribly dated now. Is there a movie or TV program or other image that captures well where boomers are now?
It's an interesting question that you ask, because so much of what is on television, of course, is focused on a younger generation, really Generation X and Generation Y. Sadly, advertisers still think that's the target they need to go after. Or you have the humorous programs like the Golden Girls that are focused on a much older generation. I think boomers, the lifestyle of the typical boomer, if there is one, isn't really depicted on television on a regular basis, oddly, because it's still the largest generation in America.
Yeah, it could be that we're just having a lapse here, but I can't.
And they have the most spending money.
But it's an interesting notion. Before too long, there needs to be that program with the college graduate kids moving back in with with their boomer parents, the elderly parents moving in. It is that sandwich generation that so many boomers are finding themselves in is one of the issues that's going on with many, many, many boomer families today.
One of the quotes that I really liked in the book was, "Retirement is a social experiment that has outlived its usefulness." What a great take. Actually, Bismarck in Germany picked 65 as the magic age for very political reasons, and then retirement in the United States didn't really start until after World War II. Where do you see retirement going?
To a large degree, retirement is a stage of life that is simply not going to exist for most boomers in the traditional sense, because there are so many opportunities to have productive, and that seems like a very weak word, but to have productive lives after 65 or 75 or even older.
The word retirement presupposes that you're that you started in one career, you're going to slog it out for X number of years, or maybe more than slog it out, maybe become rich and prosperous in that same field. But I think what's happening with our generation is, A, that is not the model we worked with to begin with. Many of us had multiple careers before we hit midlife. But certainly what we used to think of as retirement now just means change of employment, a different kind of work. Some people change fields completely. Some people do a little less of the same thing. Some people want to go in, who've been in the private sector, want to go into the public sector. Some people are in a position to use their skills to give back. But it's a different kind of work. I think one thing that boomers learned, the lesson to be learned, was that work was very important to us. But that doesn't mean that you have to keep doing the same thing for the rest of your life. It means finding what that important work is for you as you outgrow the path that you took until midlife.
You coined the term greater adulthood. I think we need for you to coin a new term for that type of career that has all these new possibilities and flexibility to it and is more by choice.
Right.
Absolutely. Perhaps one of your listeners has a great idea for a term, because it desperately, desperately is
yeah.
needed.
I mean, retirement is a crummy word. Retire, withdraw, check out is sort of what it says. And what we're saying is, no, there's a huge opportunity for reinvention, reinvigorate, repower yourself. So, yeah, the word I guess we haven't settled on one, but except to say that retirement isn't it. That ain't it, kid. That ain't it.
I don't think this is quite it, but something like career renaissance.
Yeah, something.
Exactly. I mean, it's, you know, the opportunities are so terrific for boomers to be doing so many different things. And the notion that you have to go someplace to an office or a building from 9 to 5 every day, and that's the only thing that is a job, is just an outdated concept today.
And it's funny, I used to love going to the office. I mean, I loved going to the office. I loved everything about it. I loved getting dressed up. I loved all the people. I loved lunch. But I can't tell you how great it is. And now I don't go to, I'm doing some projects that require me to go into the office. Did that today. And it's strange to me. I so enjoy working at home. I so enjoy a different pace to things.
And it goes back, too, to you were talking about boomers having just huge boundaries, and so now employment has these huge boundaries of there's much less separation between home and work and social and
right.
leisure
yeah.
and everything else.
Right. In a very short period of time, I do remember my days as an executive, where I really, when people used to say to me they wanted to work at home, I'd go, ha, ha, ha.
Mm-hmm.
You know, right, exactly. But, of course, that's been completely reinvented. Work is a virtual activity. There's no reason to do it tied to any particular place.
And you also cited that now 30% of the workplace is self-employed?
It's been a huge change in the boomer mentality. There's so many more boomers are becoming entrepreneurs in their own way, whether they're becoming a consultant or they're working part-time from home or they're working in multiple jobs but essentially self-employed. It's been one of the biggest shifts in employment. Part of it, too, is due to downsizing of some workforces and therefore forcing, you know, boomers to rethink mm-hmm. what employment means. So it isn't always 100% positive, but it's absolutely amazing how many boomers have taken on occupations that are really self-employed. And not just the white-collar consultant job. We talk to boomers in all walks of life who are self-employed, from piano tuners to waiters and bartenders and waitresses. I mean, it's really interesting the alternatives that boomers are giving themselves.
Books are going to tend to focus more on middle class and upper middle class. Are you seeing a difference between those boomers and lower socioeconomic status boomers?
I think to a certain degree, some of the lower socioeconomic status boomers are willing to accept the traditional view of retirement to a much greater degree than some of the more educated, higher socioeconomic status people.
A lot of it, if you've been doing physical work, some of the reasons for retirement that were true in our parents' generation continue to be true. But our feeling is that everybody has options. Options is independent of the concept of options is independent of social class. What, in fact, those options may be economically driven, but the existence of options is there for the picking.
And I think a lot of time for lower SES people, they're less aware of the options that if they worked in, say, an auto body, that if they were pretty knowledgeable about it, maybe they could still do work at a parts counter or as a service manager, even if they can't handle the dust and tools anymore.
Well, there are several people in our book.
Right. There was one couple from Iowa who were both blue-collar factory workers who had always wanted to travel. And that had been really their dream, to be able to travel, and not travel to Europe or Asia, but even just to travel around the United States. And they discovered, through just a series of coincidences, that the National Park System employs workers over 50 on a seasonal basis. And so they sold their home, bought a small RV, and they'll go down to the Everglades. She'll work as the hostess and in the restaurant at the park, and he may be a bartender or a handyman for the season. And then they'll get a job in another park during different seasonal times. And they are absolutely loving it. And there's a whole, the whole world of workers are pretty much over 50, these seasonal workers, and they've all discovered this all on their own, that it was an option that was available to them.
It may be that people who have been in higher socioeconomic positions in high status jobs are more stuck because their identity was more tied to their work than others. I don't know. I mean, we haven't really looked at it.
Every socioeconomic status has its different issues in confronting being stuck. But one rule I think we found for every person we talked to is no one thinks they have enough money. No matter how much money they have, doesn't matter. No one ever thinks they have enough money, and they have to rethink that and really deposition that the role of money in their lives. Because if there's one thing that we need to individually, and I think as a society, is to stop making money the deciding factor in every decision we make. And it's really, it's so sad and it's so unfortunate that so many people use money as the one thing that makes the decision for them. And it's wrong to live your life that way.
It'd be interesting to see if the recession brings on a reassessment and a change of lifestyle for people because of that.
Well, we're beginning to see that it is. The initial reaction, I think, on part of many who had watched their retirement savings disappear, was to feel that they'd be stuck working for the rest of their lives. But given a little bit of time and to consider what their other options are, have come up with more creative solutions, sometimes by necessity because they were fired, and sometimes just because when you think about it that way, if you thought retirement or getting out of the job that you no longer love was only 2 years away, and then suddenly you realize that it's 10 years away by your old arithmetic, you have to change the whole paradigm.
People are definitely reevaluating what they need to buy and are looking at all of these purchases in a very, very different way. And obviously we're seeing people buy fewer things, but they're beginning to do it very smartly and say, you know, I don't really need that new car, and I don't really need to buy all of this stuff that just sits around. Up until this year, the fastest growing business in the United States was storage units.
Hmm.
The amount of goods that people buy that they don't have room in their houses for, it was astronomical. The billions and billions of square feet of storage space that was being rented was growing at leaps and bounds. So people just have too much stuff, and I think it's one of the things they're realizing is it's not the most important thing in your life.
I mean, anecdotally, it does seem like belt tightening is creating an awareness among a lot of people that, again, their choices, that purchase decisions are just that, they're choices. They're not compulsions. They're not necessities.
You talked earlier about how at least the television advertising hasn't recognized boomers. What kind of an impact can boomers have on the marketplace to get the kinds of goods and services, for example, healthy, comfortable, good-looking shoes for women that really fit with boomer lifestyles and boomer needs?
Manufacturers are beginning to realize that the old, just like retirement is an old-fashioned paradigm, the notion that you made a brand choice when you were in your 20s and you stuck with that choice for the rest, if you bought a Ford as your first car, you bought a Ford for your whole life, is clearly not true, and advertisers are beginning to realize that people over 50 and 60 and 70 need products that are geared toward them. So we're seeing
they spend more money than anybody else, any other generation.
Yes. This is a generation that continues to spend more money on itself than any other generation ever has done. So I think what boomers can do is they can make sure that in the product choices that they make, that they buy those products that fit what they need and not buy the stuff that doesn't just because it happens to be sitting on the shelf.
What kind of role do you think boomers are going to play with healthcare in the future?
Well, boomers are going to have a tremendous impact on healthcare. Ideally, boomers will be the quintessential preventative healthcare generation by paying much more attention to the health issues that arise, that inevitably arise after 50, which needs to help restructure the healthcare industry around preventative medicine and around longevity issues that have previously really gone largely unnoticed. In my early career, I worked as a gerontologist for the New York City Department for the Aging, and it has been staggering how simply accepted the diseases of old age have been in this country, and how once you reach a certain age, doctors begin not to pay any attention to you because they just accept the fact that you're going to get these illnesses and you're going to get sick and you're going to get feeble, and it simply is not true. And boomers have the ability, I really believe that boomers are not going to shut up about this.
Well, and I think it'll be the driver to our sheer numbers, once again, will be the driver, the real driver to health care reform, because Medicare just can't handle our vast numbers without a major overhaul.
I'm kind of inclined to think that boomers may do it in spite of the healthcare system, that the system's going to be brought into preventive care kicking and screaming, and it may be the boomers going to alternative medicine and looking at a lot of other places, and the doctors and healthcare system realizing that they're missing out on more and more of the healthcare marketplace because they're not giving the boomers what they're seeking.
Absolutely, I agree with you 100%, and I think that it may be many of the manufacturers who develop these products for boomers outside of the healthcare system, because that's where a tremendous amount of the research is going on right now.
Well, look at all from the pharmaceuticals. I mean, you can't turn on TV at prime boomer viewing time without seeing endless pharma ads for every age-associated condition,
right?
Not necessarily illness, condition.
And what's happening now, which will be, I think, a key issue, is now, of course, the pharmaceutical drug consumption among boomers continues to increase. Hopefully, as you had mentioned, alternative forms of health care, perhaps more holistic forms of health care, hopefully boomers will begin to adopt those forms in larger numbers so that it's not simply increasing drug use. I think boomers, when you're taking two pills a day, it's fine. When it becomes four, and then it's eight and 16, and all of a sudden you have a medicine cabinet filled with every conceivable kind of drug, hopefully boomers will find alternatives. We're not really seeing that yet, but I definitely hope that is what's going to happen.
We've been talking with psychologist Dr. Jeff Johnson and sociologist Dr. Paula Forman, author of The Hourglass Solution, A Boomer's Guide to the Rest of Your Life. Their website and blog is at thehourglasssolution.com. Jeff and Paula, I really appreciate you sharing all your insights, and it's absolutely fascinating. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you so
much.
Thank
you.
Enjoyed it.
Thank you so much. That was great.
Bye-bye now.
Bye-bye.
Commentary. I didn't highlight it in the interview with Dr. Johnson and Dr. Forman, but their metaphor is that in middle age, many boomers feel they are trapped by previous choices, and their lives are funneling increasingly into a very narrow channel. They see the dilemma as analogous to the narrow section of an hourglass. The key to getting through that narrow passage and to the bottom part of the hourglass is realizing there are always options. Looking to other boomers for role models and success stories is their forte in getting unstuck and seeing the options. It may take courage to make the changes, but the ensuing renewed sense of purpose is usually well worth the risk. They see baby boomers as still destined to change the world because of their generation size, values, ideals, and sense of entitlement. They were also clear that most boomers find traditional retirement unsatisfying. That's because most baby boomers get bored with retirement, and because so much of our identity derives from what we do vocationally and avocationally. It's time to retire the word retirement and have a new vision for greater adulthood. So often, discussion about boomers is just about nostalgia and trivia. I found it fascinating to explore what the boomer experience is and how it's evolving. In particular, I was fascinated with their image of boomers having a very strong sense of entitlement and a willingness to take on all responsibilities, including careers, micromanaging their kids, and caring for aging parents. The downside can be difficulty prioritizing and difficulty trying to do everything. Clearly, boomers will continue to have a profound effect on our culture. Dr. Johnson and Dr. Foreman view boomers through the lens of psychology, sociology, advertising, their own experience, and hundreds of interviews with boomers. Their perspective gives pride in boomerdom and encouragement to embrace choice and learn from other boomers. I'd love to hear your feedback, and in particular, I'd love to hear any suggestions you have for what word should replace the word retirement. Send your feedback and comments to radio@agelesslifestyles.com. That's radio@agelesslifestyles.com. Baby steps. I always try to leave listeners with some little tweak, some little baby step that can help advance our cause of living longer, healthier, and happier. Today I have two baby steps. One is to consider traditional retirement obsolete, and the other is, if you feel stuck or trapped in your life course, look to other boomers for role models. A reminder that if you'd like to get my free email newsletter, the Defy Aging newsletter, you can go to my portal site, notaging.com, that's notaging.com, which can also lead you to information about my speaking services, my books, my anti-aging hypnosis CDs, and lots more. That portal site again is notaging.com. This is your anti-aging psychologist, Dr. Michael Bricky, on Ageless Lifestyles and WebTalkRadio.net, thanking you for joining us on our quest to live longer, healthier, and happier.